Hello, I'm Rachel Richards and welcome to Teenagers Untangled, the audio hug where we use research by experts and our own experience to discuss everything and anything to do with parenting teenagers.
Hello, I'm Susie Asley, mindfulness coach and psychotherapist and musician and mother of three teenagers, two of them are twins.
As a parenting coach, I've seen the transformative power of listening to how other parents work. We can feel supported, get fresh ideas, and even if we disagree, it helps us to think more clearly about the way we parent and why. So welcome, pull up a chair and let's begin. So let's start off with our nuggets. Susie, what have you got for us this week?
There's always lots, so I have to kind of filter it down, which is nice.
Yes.
It's really nice reflecting on it. But I've picked this week the idea of grabbing moments. We've talked about that before, but really grabbing the moments and setting the tone for those moments. So my nugget is, it was Halloween last week. We've always done masses for Halloween when my kids were little. We made a big mess basically every year, which is really fun, creating loads of things, really fun. And we did, I wasn't sure whether they'd want to. So we got some pumpkins. My youngest boy, who's always loved Halloween more than Christmas when he was little, just loved it. We got the pumpkins. He's like, we need pumpkins. Okay, brilliant. So then Halloween evening, he was like, come on, we've got to carve them. And so I dropped everything and was like, okay, I'm here. Let's do this. And then I asked my eldest, who's almost 18, whether he wanted to join, and expecting him to go, nah, that sounds really lame. I'm going to do something else. And he was like, oh, okay. Came in, did his pumpkin. My daughter came down, did her pumpkin. And we had the funniest, I think it's about an hour, where we were making pumpkins. There was loads of banter. They were ripping each other's pumpkins, going, that's
the best,
awful,
the best,
how you're so
competition
uncreative. That's so awful. It was just so funny.
And did you have a vote at the end of it as to
no,
who had the best?
We
normally do that.
Oh, do you?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah, no, we didn't do that.
And I caused a row in my friend's household because they sent me photos of all their pumpkins, and I chose one just for a laugh,
yeah,
for my social media, and
everyone else was offended.
Be careful.
But it was the nugget, you know, grabbing the moment,
yes,
and setting the tone. It was so much fun.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, it was good.
Like, because we talked before about how you get your teenagers and have fun with them.
Yeah.
Just take the opportunity,
yeah,
particularly if one of them brings it up. God,
yeah,
don't sit there and say, no, I can't do
and
that.
And I was in the middle of cooking dinner, so I could have gone, do you know what? You get started and I'll join you in a bit.
Yes.
But, you know, then the moment's probably passed.
Yes, and that memory will stay with you.
Yeah.
So my nugget this week is to do with something I've started at home. I do have one teenager who's more inclined to leave things out, just like her father.
Mm-hmm.
And I've started saying to her, when you leave things out, what you're doing is actively telling everybody else in the house it's someone else's job. And it's actually been very powerful, because
yeah,
I will see something, for example, you know, clothes on the floor of the shower room. I'll come downstairs and find the person and say, so there are clothes on the floor of that shower room. Who were you telling to do that job? And off she scuttled upstairs and going in to clear it up. And, you know, the same thing with breakfast dishes, anything like that. So it's been really powerful because it's actually, because I can pin them down.
Mm.
And I do have an answer ready, because some parents will say, well, what if your child says, well, it's your job. So I have that answer ready. My children wouldn't dare do it, but anyway. And it is that I would look sweetly at them and smile and say, I don't mind doing it at all. So I think that would take, what, 5 minutes, I don't know. But I charge my hourly rate out at this amount. So, and then I would take it out of the allowance. This is why the allowance is so powerful. I say, I'll take that because as payment. It's fine. I'm absolutely fine. But because you didn't ask in advance, there's also a penalty for that, because that's how it works in banking. If you actually get an overdraft without requesting it first, they will give you a big penalty. But because it's you, it's only a small penalty this time. Next time it'll be more. But that's it's absolutely fine.
I love that. It's so funny.
But my kids know that that's how I function and how I think, so they wouldn't dare.
Yes, they just make it brilliant. Wow.
I'm mean.
No, I think you need to come and sort our finances in my house.
Now, every generation rolls its eyes in despair at the youth of today, but are the teens now any more entitled than they were? What do you think, Susie?
Oh, it's a bit of a minefield, that one, isn't it? Because I think often we get that classic generational, oh, the youth of today, they're so awful and they don't have any manners or respect or blah, 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 blah. And I think there's definitely a huge element of that.
Yes.
Because the way we bring up teenagers and the way we are with our kids now is completely different in our generation. It always is. We ask them to be really mindful of what they're thinking and to voice their needs and to be assertive in a positive way and to have boundaries. And then we go, oh, but you've gone too far. Now you're really entitled. We don't like that.
And Jeremy Clarkson, who's a well-known humorous opinionated old man, recently wrote a diatribe about teenagers of today, sort of, you know, along the lines of what you're saying. He says he genuinely believes that today's teenagers are far more hopeless than anything humanity has ever produced before.
So funny. God.
Food intolerances, he says, you know, parents are now letting their kids, demand things that they would never have done before. He says now they don't have to wait for TV. They just dial it up on Netflix and internet. And he's looking back at his youth, obviously.
Yeah, he sounds like a bitter old man.
People are being shut down, so the teens don't have to listen to things they don't like. Yeah. They've even got it into their heads that they can decide what sex they'd like to be.
Oh, shocking. God. I mean, how dare they?
I wrote this in a newspaper. And then along came COVID and told them that they can get A stars in all their A levels without doing any revision. And he said, you know, he looks at the what happened at the Reading Rock Festival and Leeds Rock Festival in the UK this summer, and people burning tents and throwing chairs into the crowds. And he says, you know, no one's ever said that they couldn't, not their parents, not their teachers, and certainly not the police.
He sounds like a jealous old man.
There was a touch of that in the entire article. I mean,
brilliant.
I mean, there were lots of the responses of people were all like, yeah,
of course.
But, you know, they were all old people too, I'm sure. And because we do this every generation.
We do
it's
every
always
generation.
Grandparents going, oh, my day.
Yeah.
We had to chew our peanuts 100 times.
Yeah. We want it all, really, don't we? But I mean, there is obviously behaviour that isn't acceptable, or that's usually relational, isn't it? It's between people, things that we don't like. But the big sweep of the youth of today is dreadful. I don't really buy into that.
No, I don't buy it either. So we're looking at the definition of entitled, because we need to sort of drill down as to what we're talking about here. The definition that I've got is by a man called Robert Porter. All the links are in the write-up of our podcast. He says a sense of entitlement is a personality trait that is based on a person's belief that they deserve privileges or recognition for things that they didn't earn. So in simple terms, people experiencing this believe that the world owes them something in exchange for nothing. And the reason that's important is because they will be upset for not getting something that they think that they should be getting, even if we think they don't necessarily deserve it or haven't earned it.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I looked into self-worth, and there are people trying to measure self-worth, as there are people trying to measure everything. And several researchers have gone into this, and there's a self-esteem scale, which is called the Rosenberg self-esteem scale. And this has been used, I think it was started in 1965, but there was one particular study that went from 1968 to 95, I think. Twenge and Campbell, and they found that the level of self-esteem has risen substantially over that time, and that when you compare the scores of people in the teens in 1960s with those now, or rather 2001, I think they've got here, and there was a 73% increase of people who had high self-esteem. So people feel better about themselves,
which
but
is
that
great.
Doesn't necessarily mean they're entitled.
No, and you know, it's always a question of how is that measured, and you know, before this, the teenagers that are now, how are you asking the questions, all of that. It's all very
interesting. And is it being consistently done every year?
Yeah.
The same sort of cohorts of people?
Yeah.
Or, you know, you always have to have a big question mark over these things. So let's say that we don't think self-esteem necessarily is the self-esteem is the thing I think a lot of old people look at now. And, you know, for example, my 20-year-olds who are out in the workplace are very much happier telling people who are in superior positions that they're not prepared to put up with something.
Yay, hooray for
that. But they do it in a wonderful, I'm so impressed and a bit intimidated, because the way they do it is very sophisticated, and they just look at it and say, well, I'm not going to put up with that. And I think back and think, oh God, you know, I did.
Yeah.
But I love that.
Yeah, and the power systems don't like that, do they? Because, you know, we like what works. And if you're in a position where it's working for you, and that the youth of today, or however you want to, the young people, they, you know, they take it and they shut up and they don't complain. That's pretty easy, isn't it? And now we're teaching our young, hopefully they have better self-esteem, and we're teaching them to set their boundaries and to you know, make sure that their needs are taken care of. I think that's a really good thing. But if you, if that's rocking your boat, you're not going to like it.
No, quite. And I think the difficulty is, as a parent, knowing how do I raise children who have high self-worth and not ones that are entitled, who think that they deserve things when they haven't done anything to earn it.
Yes, because it can go to a place that is not very pleasant in a, on a, socially.
Yes. So why does it happen? The sources of entitlement are not fully understood, but researchers have pointed to factors such as, you know, the spoiled child, where parents never say no, they're always saying yes to whatever they want. Overpraising children for small tasks, which leads them down a path of constantly seeking approval for things, and then they feel discouraged when they don't receive that. But I'm not sure that's really entitlement. But anyway, when they don't push their child through a difficult phase and they just give in and allow them things. Being favoured by teachers or families, coaches, when you're brilliant at something, and then they don't pull you up on the other things that are socially unacceptable just because you're such a great, so, you know, the typical, the sports person who's great at something, and then they have horrible behavior in other areas, but they're not reprimanded for it.
Yeah. It seems to be at the core of all of that. I mean, how you label it is, you know, dependent on your perspective, isn't it? But
yes,
the entitlement, I don't know, but, that comes back again to that we hate discomfort. We hate sitting with discomfort when it's our own discomfort, and when we see our kids, it's discomfort. If they voice a need and we, you know, we see them struggling with something, we want to quickly stick a plaster over it, so we might give them more than actually they need.
Yes.
Or, you know, the spoilt kid, you know, can we bear the kid going, I want it,
yes,
you know, can we bear that? And that is seems to be more of the linking thing.
Very interesting. And actually that comes to one of the most painful scenarios, which is the clogs to clogs, where people who've grown up really very poor or very disadvantaged, who then don't want to see their children going through the same things, and they'll do anything they can to ensure that their children get everything they want.
Yep.
And unfortunately, that doesn't necessarily end very well.
No, because we hate seeing our kids in pain, and then we hate the discomfort of that. So we're just doing it with things or patching over. Oh dear, it doesn't matter. Here, have this.
Yes.
So the difference, I guess, is, you know, there's nothing wrong with our kids voicing needs. You know, the classic might be a smaller kid or even a teenager, you know, I really want that really beautiful, expensive computer. I really want it. And that can easily be smacked down with, oh, well, if he's looked at the price tag, it's so expensive, I can't afford that, et cetera, you're so spoiled, kind of thing. Another approach could be, oh, wow, yeah, that computer's amazing. I completely understand why you would want that. Can't it do amazing things? Yeah, that makes perfect sense that you'd like that. I would like one of those too. However, we can't afford that right now, so let's keep that as a dream and maybe put it on your list for the future. But I totally get why you'd want that.
There's a totally
different vibe about that.
Yes, validating their desires and the things they're dreaming about rather than making them feel bad about it. But at the same time, explaining that it's not, you know, I won't just go and walk in there and buy it for you.
No, then, like, I hope in my home that my kids understand that their needs, their desires, their wishes are never wrong. They might not get them. They might not be met.
Yes.
But the voicing of them is never wrong.
Yes. And you're not a brat for saying you'd like
because
something.
Because then shame.
I love that. It's a really good way of dealing with that particular scenario. And why is it such a problem? So there's a lady called Arlen Kunchik who wrote a piece in Very Well Mind looking at entitlement. And she said that when it comes to the workplace, the problem is that these people who are over-entitled can wreak havoc in a team because they may spend more time focusing on doing things quickly rather than doing the work well. They may have trouble meeting deadlines and often seek instant gratification for their work. They can create conflict because what they'll do is they'll hand off work that they don't think they should be having to do. You know, there are all sorts of, it's coming back to what you were saying, which is it's a relational problem.
Yeah. And there's nothing like, I recognize all of those things. I mean, who doesn't want to do their work quickly? if we're honest.
Yes.
But it's how it's met, isn't it? It's not that, again, it's not the needs, the desires, the wishes there's anything wrong with. We want to get through some stuff quickly. It's how it's met. Are you allowed to get away with that? Mm. Or does somebody go, actually, do you know what? I need you to step up a bit more.
And is there a sense that, you know, you're in a workplace, you've joined this workplace, you're in a team. And when you won't do something, then it ends up falling on someone else. And that sense of entitlement is going to affect other people negatively.
Yeah. So then there's a lack of empathy, isn't there? So there's like a crossover with other things that we've
It's the lack of empathy. About. This is it. Yes.
Like, you know, traits of, you know, narcissistic traits. Mm. I mean, we all have them. We're all on a continuum of that. But the idea that we don't have empathy, we don't understand that when we are taking and maybe not pulling our weight, that's actually affecting somebody else. And if we're not taught to be aware of that, then that can end badly.
Yes. Now, the benefits of entitlement, because there are benefits, are, you know, research shows that entitled people are sometimes better at creative problem solving. They perform better in certain types of negotiations because they're not going to give in because they think they deserve it, right?
Oh, I've met a few of them.
And entitled people have a high view of themselves, so they're less likely to have other people take advantage of them. Yeah. So, you know, there are benefits to this, definitely. But it's about reining it in so it doesn't actually cause either disruption and problems in the family or in their future life that they're going to. Absolutely. And sometimes they won't be aware of it. I mean, you know, we've all seen entitled kids.
Yeah.
We know what an entitled teenager can be like. Yeah. And it's the one who always expects the other friend to do all the work in terms of turning up for something, even though they want the friendship. So, you know, they say, well, we're going to do this, but you've got to do all the extra work.
Yes.
Because they're just not thinking.
So then it's teaching them again that, you know, that might be very much your wish that you do as little as possible. Totally understand that. but that's not okay for me. I need you to do more. And I often think that the antidote to that kind of thinking and that kind of way of being entitled is gratitude.
Absolutely.
If you're not grateful, then you can't be grateful and entitled
at the same time. Absolutely. And that comes into the list of things that I've got as antidotes to this. It's a really, really good one. Yeah. It's the one my kids always bring up. They're always saying, you know, gratitude. It makes me so much happier.
Yeah.
And actually also the antidote, you know, it made me think when you were just talking that if you have a teen who has an entitled friend, it's also about setting boundaries with the entitled friend. Exactly. It's a good practice because I've had that with all of my teens where somebody's, you know, stepped over the line and you just say, okay, I know it's really upsetting and you feel undervalued, but actually it's a way that you can learn what your needs are and then be able to say back to them, no, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. And maybe nobody's ever said, and maybe nobody's ever said to that teenager, do you know what? That's not all right. I don't like that.
Exactly. So how do we do it? Amy McCready of Positive Parenting Solutions summed it up beautifully. Number one, expect more. Give your kids credit. Expect your teens to make family contributions. We're referring to that. Remember when we talked about chores, it's not chores, it's family contributions. We're all in a team together. And everybody needs to be doing something for this family and you need to step up for it. And that's quite hard because I know sometimes you look at it. I've talked to lots of parents who said, yeah, but it's just quicker and easier if I do it.
And there's resistance because none of them are like we've talked about before. None of them are like, are going to go, oh, yeah, thanks so much, Mum, for asking me to do this.
Scrub the loo.
Yeah, I'm so grateful for you. There's going to be resistance.
Yes. But it's how you, I think it's how you frame it and pointing out that this is part of being in a family, because then they learn, they just learn about being a human being. Yeah. And this is what human beings do, right?
Yeah, I love that. That's really nice.
Give up on giving up. So if you say yes when really you know you should be saying no, and you give them things which they're begging for, if they have a tantrum, I mean, you know, we get teenagers with tantrums too.
Oh, yeah. Or they just adults with tantrums. I've seen them. I've had them.
So when they're you know, making it very difficult for you, and you just say, oh, just say yes to, you know, we sort that, all we're doing is we're teaching them that that horrible strategy actually works.
Yes.
So we sort of have to grit our teeth and carry on with knowing that that's the right thing to do.
Yeah. And if we can't make that call in the moment because we've had a crappy day ourselves, or we're tired or whatever, we don't know what the right answer is, we can always go, I don't know, and come back to me tomorrow.
Yes. Yeah. Or, you know, I'm not going to buy that right now. So it gives you a pause to think about, how am I going to deal with this?
And they can work on their negotiation strategies.
Exactly. Hand over the reins. So whenever we rescue our kids from their mistakes and intervene on their behalf, or smoothing the ways to make things easier for them, we're robbing them of a learning opportunity. Mm. We can help prepare them by role-playing this sort of skill where, you know, if they're having a tricky situation, just get them to really think through how they feel about it and how they can deal with it themselves.
Yeah.
And we need to be able to sit back, and we all as parents desperate to rescue our children, because I love your point. It feels uncomfortable and you just want it to go away.
Yeah, it feels awful.
Yes. And we're sort of living vicariously through our children.
Yes.
And we have to be able to step back and say, you can coach them.
Mm.
You can say, I can give you ideas, but I can't solve this for you.
Yeah.
We have to sit and think through. So we're sitting side by side, not across the table from them, not like the problem's in the middle. What you're doing, you're sitting next to them and saying, the problem's in front of both of us. Mm. How can we think this through in a way that it will help?
Yeah, and I'm your support. I'm your safe container, but you need to do it yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Here's one of my favorites. Shut down the ATM.
Oh, yeah, you're very good at this.
It is the big one. And instant gratification is really king in today's society. I talked about this in an episode quite some time ago, and it's been really a game changer for us and our family. And both my daughters have got allowances, and it's purely the money that I totted up that I would be spending on them anyway. And I just put that into a pot, and I put it into their account every week. If you want to hear more about how I've done this, how I get them to negotiate with me, all of that stuff, it's in that particular podcast. But the reason, so this is a year
it's
on
brilliant.
From doing it.
It's so good, and I still haven't done it.
But the year in from having done this, one of them, who's really quite a profligate spender, who lacks self-control over these things, it's not her fault. She just sees things and she loves it, and she loves spending money on her friends, and she's clicked.
Amazing.
And it was when she sat there saying, I want some cargo pants, and I just don't have any money. And I said, well, you do, but you just keep spending it.
Yes.
And she finally realized that if she actually did nothing with the money, it would then accumulate. And then she bought them. And the joy she has when she walks around wearing those pants.
Yes.
Is and every single time she, and I said to, when she bought them, I said, so just remember, you did that. You made that happen by saving your money.
Brilliant.
And being focused on what you want to do. And the other thing is, when they do want more money, it's also become where they've now realized that they can earn more, but they have to do things for it. So one of them's really good at ironing. I hadn't really thought about it, but she is. She said, I like ironing. I can't stand it. So I now pay her per shirt. We looked up how much the local ironing place would charge per shirt.
Yeah.
And she's getting a fraction of that because she's not a professional. Yeah. And it's my iron and my electricity. But she gets money per shirt for my husband's shirts. And
it's teaching her really great skills.
And I'll also say the other one, which is that I have an older daughter who's particularly academic, and the younger one is coming up behind.
Mm.
And so for the older one, I've said, well, you know, I've looked at how much it costs to pay a tutor. So it's £30 an hour for a tutor of that sort of level.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I would pay you, the older daughter, £15 and the younger daughter £5.
Mm-hmm.
Per hour, if she coaches you, tutors you in the, because they're a year apart.
Yeah, it's
brilliant. So she can actually coach her in exactly what she needs to know a year on.
And there's incentive for both.
There's an incentive for both of them, because if you only do pay the one, then one
feels
of them's
like a punishment.
Yes. And they're both, well, see, my mother, I've talked about that before, where my mother would basically make sure that we both had the same, we're both on the same page. Yes. So they're both benefiting from it.
Brilliant. I think that's brilliant.
Yeah. So I think, me, I absolutely love the system. Yeah. And my girls on a regular basis say, "Mum, this is brilliant. I love
it." Yeah, it's great. My daughter actually has started babysitting, and the babysitting rate around us, I think, is very generous, like ridiculously generous. Hope none of the parents are listening. She still appreciates it. But her brother actually has been like, "Oh my God, I want some money too.
Yes,
what can I do?" So it's
and really once they start seeing that they can
like,
benefit,
she can buy stuff. No, I wanted to be able to do that too. So he's asking, "What can I do around the house? Or can I do the, you know, do some dog walking? What can I do?" He's having a think about it. Brilliant.
Yes, and money is a really good driver, and you don't want to strip your children of ambition.
No.
And I think that when they get anything and everything, there's literally no reason for them to be doing things.
No, and our
except
relationship
joy.
Our relationship with money is actually, it's not just about the money, is it? It's,
no, it never is. But also, I suppose the last thing I want to say about it is that it's actually helped them focus in on what they can do well to earn.
Yes.
So, you know, I would not, I started asking them to clean my car because that's something I paid for, and they both hated it.
Yeah.
So, and what's the point? You know, I can go to the professional car cleaner and get them to do it, you know, if I've got the money. But if you can find things that your kids can do well, and it doesn't always have to be about money, but you are having to spend money on your kids no matter what. So why not give that, hand that to them when they're teenagers and give them some responsibility. But you do, once again, you have to go through the discomfort of saying no.
Yeah.
So I have had them say, can you give me a bit more money this week? Or can you forward me the amount?
Mm.
And mostly it's no.
No, you have to wait.
You live with that discomfort. Yeah. You live with the fact that you already spent that money so that you understand how it works.
Yeah, because we like being rewarded for what we do as well. You know, there's the whole discussion of should we pay for chores in the house, that kind of thing. But I really love the way you frame it, because I think it's really incentivizing for them and teaches them responsibility. It's great.
Yes, and that sense that we have trusted them with their own money is a compliment.
Yes, that's really true.
Right? Yeah. So it's actually handing over some responsibility so they step up with their responsibility.
Yeah.
And then the final one, which is to uncenter their universe. So making it clear that they need to be grateful for things they've got. And gratitude, as you said earlier, is just the foundation of, you know, you can't be entitled and grateful.
No, you can't. And I don't think you can be, you can't have those two feelings in your body because gratitude, we have chemical reaction to feeling grateful. If we do it in a way like we can't, again, we've talked about this before, we can't tell our kids, you know, you should be grateful for that. That's not what I mean.
No.
it's just teaching them and encouraging them and maybe doing it as a little practice if they're up for it, you know, or modeling it.
Yes.
There's maybe a better way if they don't want to, if they think it's a bit weird, but that, you know, you're showing your appreciation and sitting with the feeling of feeling grateful. You can do that at bedtime or whatever, so that it becomes part of their, it's embodied rather than a thought.
And the research is clear that people who have an attitude of gratitude in life are happier, less depressed, take stress in their stride, and they see life with healthy optimism.
They do. It's really true. And it can be a game changer. Yeah, you can have everything in the world in a material thing or in any respect. You can have everything and you still don't have to be an ass about it. I mean, you can be grateful. You can be giving. You can be generous. You can be appreciative. The one thing doesn't have to, they don't have to go together.
No, completely. I think this is the best way to finish off this bit about entitlement. It's all about gratitude.
Yeah.
Does any of this resonate with you? Do you disagree with us? That's
love
fine. We're
that.
Happy to hear about it. We'd love to hear from you. You can email help@teenagersuntangled.com. And if you've enjoyed the episode, then why not help other parents? Tell your friends, tell the school, subscribe to our podcast, and it would be a massive bonus if you left a review. You can also find everything at our own website, which is www.teenagersuntangled.com. There are links to every episode, a blog, reviews, easy ways to contact both of us. Susie has her own website, which is
a mindful-life.co.uk.
Brilliant. Right. That's it for now. Goodbye.
Bye-bye for now.